Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
What's up, everybody? It's Joel LaPuma. You were listening to the Complex Sneakers podcast. As always, I'm with my two friends and my two co-hosts, Mr. Matt Welty.
Everyone doing?
And of course, he just did a little shadow boxing I saw on the Zoom, my man Brendan Dunn. How we doing, buddy?
Just trying to stretch out the muscles before we get into it.
Go ahead. Get loose.
We
get
have a
ready.
Muscular man on the podcast today.
That's true.
No spoilers, but so I want to make sure I'm fully worked out.
That's true. You look a little puffed up. Is that did you do some extra sets because you knew this guy was coming on? You know,
I'm just in case.
Extra sets for Brendan means he did a set.
I mean, because
they're at a baseline of zero. So
listen, this guy, I used to call this guy a couple months ago on Saturday morning and he wouldn't pick up and he was like, oh, sorry, I was just doing 14 miles. So don't sleep on his fitness.
I'm to be totally honest, Welty's working out way more than I am right now. And I need to get back on that wagon. We need to motivate each other.
Same. Mm. Welty is definitely the one who's been working out the most during quarantine.
Although Brendan did about 30 minutes ago mention or he pitched Adam Caporel from the Load Management podcast that he wants to outline his yoga routine.
So that's some coverage on Complex Sports. I know you guys read the parkour article I put up, so I'm trying to keep pushing in that direction.
And I'm with it. You know why? Because right now his brand is hot and we're trying to expand the brand into every Welty. If you learn anything, it's when the brand is hot, you try to corner every single market. He's trying to corner the parkour market.
He's trying to corner. He's out here fighting on Twitter on my behalf.
You saw what I tweeted?
Yeah, I saw that. We're going to talk about that. He's trying to corner the yoga market. He may end up with a Lululemon deal by the end of this podcast. You never know. You never know.
Oh,
and
God.
The Reebok deal, which, listen, the Reebok deal, it was all fun and games. It's still fun and games.
I don't want to let my ego get too out of
control. It's still fun and games. I see a plethora of Reebok boxes behind him. But, you know, I remember what I learned in school.
Tell me.
You know, I learned very early on when people were saying three-peat, that Pat Riley trademarked three-peat. And last week, there wasn't a trademark situation, but a term that I think Brendan Dunn, to be totally transparent, something I've never heard before, it was used on Full Size Run for the past 17 seasons, was Boktober. And Reebok got a Boktober collection coming out. And with that all being said, I'm passing it to my co-host, Matt Welty, for his thoughts.
So there's a there's a Boktober collection coming out that we found out about, I would say, probably like 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. There's three different shoes. All three of them are like Halloween inspired with cobwebs and skeletons on them. And as the story goes, because I'm not on the chain, but Brendan Dunn was sent a PR email saying, hey, check out the new Reebok Boktober collection. No news. He had no sense that this was going to happen, even though he does have some sort of contractual obligation with the company. This was the first he had heard of it. So it gets put out.
The people think I designed the shoe. I don't have anything to do with the Reebok Boktober shoes. I know a lot of people heard of Boktober because of me, but I don't have anything to do with it.
Man, was that Slack exploding? I had no idea what was going on.
Made an editorial decision not to cover the collection.
Wow.
Just put it out there because, okay. You know.
Who made that decision?
It was a decision.
Wow, yes. You guys. Wealthy, okay.
I want you to help me here. I want you to attest to something. Oh my goodness. I have tried again and again to be humble with respect to this, and I've tried to let other people tell the story because obviously, when I see that Reebok is doing a Boktober pack, I may feel some type of way, but I want to let other people decide whether or not I popularized that term or whether or not I deserve any credit. So, Wealthy, please at least tell the listeners that I have remained humble throughout this.
Yeah, I have. Me and Brendan had a short conversation before this, kind of just going back through all the time that we've done Full Size Run, and we were kind of just thinking of like, where did this all start? How did it all happen? Where did the Bok Boys thing come from? You know, I don't think that I think we came to the conclusion that can't take credit for creating Bok Boys.
Who started it?
It was like an internet thing. Like people like Nick Engvall and stuff had said Bok Boys on Instagram before. So not to take any credit for it. And then I think Brendan started wearing Reebok at the start of the Gary Vaynerchuk episode. That was the first time.
Okay.
He wore the shoes. And then I think he kept on wearing it and we joked around and said Bok Boys. And it became a thing.
Who said Boktober? Who said Boktober?
And I think Brendan came up with all the months. We were just joking around together, Bok Boys, whatever. And then he came up. I don't know if he came up with it, but he was the first person on the show to say, this is Boktober.
Okay, well.
So, and then from there on.
That's how I remember it. People at Reebok, if you hear this, this is not Brendan Dunn claiming that he is owed anything with respect to this. Again, I'm letting other people tell the story. I'm only responding to it because people are adding me, tagging me daily, hourly, assuming that I had something to do with the Reebok Boktober collection. Let's please stop talking about me. Gentlemen, how was your weekend? Okay.
One more thing though, you're not going to do the Sean Carter. I want 700%.
I'm going to let other people tell the story.
There's a little connection to Reebok there too.
My mentions are crazy right now though, because I did get a tweet off about it, and for the record, I did ask Brendan's permission to tweet about it because I didn't want to be, you know, talking shit when if it's not cool.
Thank you for that. Well,
hey, listen, total transparency. We've had some Friday night convos with you. Letting the tweets fly and us having to deal with some stuff. So look at the growth here.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot more level headed, but
yes,
the mentions right now are crazy. Mm. I'd like to give a shout out to Premium Pete for backing you up saying
he was backing me up.
Oh, backing him up.
It's not because I tweeted that it's weird that it happened. And Pete said, not weird, very normal in the sneaker world, but also very sad.
Well, Premium Pete is a man of loyalty, of class, of integrity. And
he knows a thing or two about this thing of ours.
Exactly. He's a friend of ours. Couldn't say it better myself.
There's a lot of people saying that they're going to boycott.
Let's stop talking Reebok. About me. I don't think we don't need a 10-minute intro just about me. I mean, come on. I mean, although.
Keep going. No. So my week was okay. A little update for me. The Benjamin Kicks package that people have been, I've mentioned it a couple of times. The Benjamin Kicks package is in the mail, and it's not what I originally thought.
You put that pressure on.
He said, hey, just let me know when you get it. It's not going to be what you originally thought, which were the Grateful Dead dunks. So I'm wondering what it's going to be. But the funny thing about Benjamin Kicks is, Wealthy, let me go. The funny thing is, like, I have talked to three different, like,
how old is Benjamin Kicks?
I'm not sure. I'd have to check.
I think he is a lot older than.
Okay.
People. He's not older, but he's like one of these kids that's like, he's like the Peter Pan of sneaker reselling where everyone thinks that he's been like 15. No, but everyone still thinks he's 15.
I'm
like,
sorry, I
think
he's 21. Wealthy, yeah. Not to interrupt, and I immediately interrupted. Keep telling us about teenage sneaker reseller Ben
Kicks. The thing that's really funny is I've talked to around 3 to 5 people during this process of like, oh, and Ben is just like, hey, so-and-so is going to handle it. So-and-so is going to handle it. So-and-so is going to handle it. And then just joking around, I think I hit Ben like, come on, Ben, this is bad business at this point. And then some guy group chat was like, hey, I don't know who you've been dealing with, but
when he's Ben straight to the top.
Exactly. No, he goes, I don't know who you've been dealing with besides, but he was like, when Ben tells me to do something, it happens 4 hours later. Shipping notification. So we'll see.
I realized that Ben Kicks Empire was such a heavily staffed organization.
He has a little. We'll see though.
Well,
we'll
do you see get what anything shows good up in the mail lately?
Yeah. What's up?
No, I don't I don't think so.
Invincible Adidas?
Oh, I got those. Those are nice. Got it from a guest. Shout out Michael Vincent, who was such an early guest on Full Size Run that I said to Brennan that he sent Brennan the shoes. And Brendan goes, he was never a guest on our show.
Who? I've never seen that episode.
Who?
This is this guy, Michael Vincent, who used to work at Bape back in the day.
Good dude.
OG, like, good dude. But I think that he was a guest before I was even a full-time cast member on Full Size Run. And wow. Brendan was on vacation, so I had to just fill in for his spot.
It was a different era.
It was a different
era. It was funny to kind of go back that far. That was 2017.
You sent me the link and I was like, I have never seen this before in my life.
I bet it's so much different, and I bet the camera presence is so much different. I look back at some episodes of Sneaker Shopping and it's like, wow, I just stood there, you know?
A little rough, right?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
I'm happy to say I will not have UPS or FedEx or anybody interrupting the podcast today.
That's great.
FedEx already came through. They dropped off to Casablanca 327. Shout out to Stevie. Fun fact, my mom lived in Casablanca for a while, so that's a very personal shoe for me. Got the Iraq ZXs last week. I don't know if it's set tripping to wear them with the MQ hoodie, but I gotta ask Lei Takanashi about that.
That's a lot of technical talk, which I missed, but I'll Google it. Just shout out, you know, I mentioned real quick, we'll get in and we'll get out of this. I mentioned that Index Portland, you know, I called them up for an order and it was a shoe that I'm happy about. And the shoe came and I'm very excited. It's one that I've really chased. And Welty, like, you're smiling because you know that I'm sure this was peak, like, bright lights of the sneaker industry. Me as an intern. When did these release again?
2003.
Pharrell NERD Dunks with the Brain logo on them.
Yeah, so even before I was an intern, just watching these from afar and locking these down, super happy to get these. And shout out to Index, great customer service. And I just love that that samples come through that store because it's so close to Nike headquarters. And
special spot.
Little known fact, that shoe was part of what it was called, the Artist Collection.
There's a tag on it. There's a tag on it, Wealthy, that says it.
I believe there was three shoes in the collection. And one of the artists in the collection that most people forget is that Halle Berry had a Nike Rift.
The Rift,
that
right?
Also released alongside the Pharrell Dunk. It's just a shoe that kind of time lost. It was like a women's only release. But
that's an awesome shoe, though. That's an awesome...
That's your little fact, sneaker fact of the day.
I love that. And the tag says Nike invited three personalities per collection to express themselves through product design.
I was going to say, fun story. I've actually very recently discussed with our guest that Halle Berry Rift and that pack.
Really?
Yes. So we got to.
I feel like you text everyone. Are you just texting everyone all the time?
Joe, I'm trying to chase every single lead.
My goodness. You text everyone.
I'm out here, man.
I dated a girl years ago that randomly that randomly had that shoe in the collection. And I remember like going through the sneakers and pulling it out and being like, what the fuck
is
this?
That's an awesome shoe to have, the Halle Berry Rift. All right, I think.
And the NERD Dunks.
Yeah, I'm really happy to have these.
Joe, what you got to do to get Halle Berry on Sneaker Shopping? That'd be a pretty good episode, right?
Definitely. I would definitely be into that. That would be a banger episode. I think we could bring in our guest. I'm really excited about it.
Wait. No. I got to put one bounty out there since you're talking about picking up rare things. Can I give one little bounty before we bring him
yes.
on?
Yes.
I need somebody to help me fix a vintage telephone.
Oh, okay. Where did you get that?
It don't work. You never built a red box before, Joe?
No.
I need somebody to help me fix a vintage telephone. If you got any leads or old rotary joint, that's the only time I'll allow you to DM me.
Okay, look, all of Alexander Graham Bell's work has now peaked on the Complex Sneakers podcast because you're soliciting someone to help you with the telephone.
We got to use this power for good.
Absolutely. All right, let's get into it. We have a great guest this week on the Complex Sneakers podcast. Someone who we've all talked to throughout the years, and I think Welty has interviewed him a couple times, and it's good that we are all sitting down with him because there's a lot to talk about. So let's get to it.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
For over two decades, there's been a reseller who let his inventory speak for itself. In an era where the hustle of flipping sneakers has turned independent sellers into online personalities and has spawned everything from weekly YouTube content to full-out consignment stores, our guest on today's podcast has leaned on his eye for hoarding product from the 90s and early 2000s and his my way or the highway process. At any time when there's a boom of a certain sneaker silhouette or Travis Scott explodes your favorite obscure Nike Dunk SB, there's a chance today's guest has a full-size run of them. An LA resident who sells these sneakers mostly via his personal Instagram, where elusive pairs pop up and quickly disappear as they're purchased. Please welcome to the Complex Sneakers Podcast, the infamous Corgi Shoe.
Wow, you guys are too kind. I could have used you when I went in front of the judge in 2004.
Man, you need a character witness. We are right here.
Seriously, absolutely. Those letters would have helped me out big time.
How are you, man?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good, man. Day by day, you know how it is.
How's the you guys working on your WAP challenge or?
They tried to ban me from Instagram the first time I uploaded it, so I got to be really careful.
Oh man, you got that's it's dangerous. It's dangerous.
Absolutely,
Corgi. I want to go all the way back with you, and I want to figure out when you first started caring about sneakers and when shoes were really important to you as a young person. Was it that Nike Air Python in 1987, 88 that you walked in and saw at Foot Locker, or was it before then?
Even before then, 1985, what really started things off was the Converse Weapon, okay. Magic versus Bird campaign. Mm-hmm. You know, they also had Dr. J. That was like the first thing. It was just, I was like a sponge and I just absorbed it. I would watch the games and, you know, they'd have that, the Converse would have those commercials all the time. It was a huge, huge campaign. And that really started my admiration for shoes. And then, like you said, the Air Python, which was just an ugly shoe, but it was just fascinating to me. And then you get into 1987 was huge too, with the Nike campaign, the Revolution with the Beatles song or the John Lennon song. And, you know, that was like the Air Max One, you had the Air Revolution. Then you started to have, I started to notice the Jordan, what was that? The Jordan 3 at that time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Jordan 3 at that time. I remember exactly who had it. Ray Jimenez and Justin Gutierrez both had that shoe. And, you know, that's just how it began. And from there, I would say, you know, I used to get Sports Illustrated, read the sports page, and I would look at the shoes, who's wearing what. I remember Chris Jackson, a freshman at LSU, was playing in the Bo Jackson Air Trainer 3s. You know, just stuff like that, little things like that that made me really start to notice the shoes and which players were wearing them back when players mattered to brands.
Did you know anybody else at that time who cared about sneakers, or did you sense that you were alone in being kind of a nerd about sneakers?
there was, you know, kids, there was always some kids at school that had some, you know, sneakers. When Nike introduced the Air Unit, that started, you know, kind of a big thing. I remember my first pair of shoes with the Air Unit was a Air Trainer 3, and it was white, neutral gray, and like a baby blue. It was Bo Jackson. That was my first one. Yeah, it just kind of went from there.
And was skateboarding big to you too? Because I know a lot of people know you through SB and your connection to Supreme.
Yeah, skateboarding was cool, and that was always done, you know, done as like a kid, like many people throughout high school. You know, but back then, another thing, a lot of people were wearing Jordans to skate or trainers to skate, and it just kind of manifested, you know, from there.
Did you see silhouettes back then that you were talking about and identifying them as cool sneakers that have standed the test of time? Like, is your rate in terms of I should pay attention to the Air Trainer 3 or the Jordan 1s? Were you good at kind of seeking those out when you were even young in your career of buying sneakers?
To a fault, I kind of bought stuff I liked. Like, I was stocked with, like, you know, Bo Jackson. I liked the Lakers, so I was never a Jordan fan per se, and I didn't really wear Jordan sneakers. My first pair of Jordan sneakers was the Eddie Jones Team Jordan.
Wow.
Probably in 90. I mean, I admired Jordan for his play, but, you know, I was a Laker fan, so I'm not going to wear a Jordan shoe. It just, I'm pretty, you know, it's pretty strict like that. You know, I know everybody, that's contrary to everybody who, you know, has been wearing Michael Jordan since they were born, but I never was and never have been a big Jordan fan, you know, Jordan sneaker fan. I definitely admire how they look, but I was just always into other shoes, other Dunks, Blazers. I liked Air Forces, a lot of runners, all the runners, you know, from the inception of the Air Unit in like 87. So
how do you go from, because I remember we had a conversation, because everyone I think knows you from your stockpile of 2001 Jordan 1s that you just had an endless supply of them. And I remember you telling me that how that came about was you were just obsessed with the shoe and just decided to keep on buying and buying and buying them, not with the intention of selling them or sitting then on them for 20 years. You just ended up buying like a couple hundred pairs of 2001 Jordan 1s out of the blue. And
yeah, most definitely. A lot of shoes were like that, whether it was a Jordan 1 or whether it was like a Blazer High or, you know, Delta Force, Alpha Force, a couple other Jordan, you know, for some reason, I really liked the Jordan 9, aesthetically. So I had a ton of those, and, you know, I just had this like odd fixation with buying a lot of shoes, and I had money at the time. So I was just stacking, you know, just buying endlessly, you know, of certain SKUs and just certain types. And it evolved into pretty much everything. I just had like, you name it, and I had it, and I had a multiples of them, and it was just like a complete oddity, you know, maybe a mental health type issue going on there, and it just worked out for me. Thankfully, you know, I could have bought a lot of other things that ended up, you know, not being worth anything.
So no one was guiding you. No one was saying, hey, get as many pairs as you can because this thing in 5 years, in 10 years, in 20 years, may be something that you can make a lot of money off of. There was no one that you were looking to, like an OG or a mentor who was doing the same. It was kind of you just on your own doing this.
No, it was me. And it was just me. And I didn't have friends that were really into, I mean, they were casually into sneakers. Like it's almost similar to, you know, you'll hear a lot of guys talking about, oh, I've been wearing shoes, you know, I've been into sneakers forever since I was a kid. Then they'll be like, you know, I had a pair of Jordan 3s when I was 9. And then fast forward 25 years and they, you know, drop a couple million on shoes and they're just like, you know, that's like their history. I didn't have guidance or anything. It was an oddity. I didn't really talk about it. People didn't know, you know, if you were into sneakers then, you were probably, it was kind of, you know, maybe might get a questionable label, you know, females like, you know, were into shoes, you know, not necessarily sneakers, but they'd get their, like, you know, their whatever, their heels and their pumps and all that stuff. So, you know, I had a ton of shoes. So I kept it kind of quiet.
How much money were you spending on shoes in that period?
Jeez, my peak was after I got out of high school. And
this is late 90s.
Let's say this is mid 90s, actually. And I had some money. So let's say 95, 96, 90s. Let's say starting in 97, I came into some money and I was just buying everything and anything. Mom and pop stores, then at Nike Town. And then I found out about like eBay. And that was a whole new thing.
But there was no particular reason for you to do this. You just decided that you
needed to own every single shoe. Yes, I appreciated sneakers that much, even if I wasn't going to wear them. I wore like the basic stuff. I had like this New Balance silhouette, the 496. So I always wear like a beat up pair of those. I had Vans. I'd always wear a pair of Air Max Runners, maybe a Bo Jackson. But I had all the Agassiz. I didn't wear them. I didn't like that necessarily those colors or they didn't appeal to me on foot. A lot of shoes don't appeal to me on foot, but they look amazing just sitting there.
Yeah, because you were wearing the same sneakers over and over. And the New Balance 496 is like super kind of dad shoe looking, yes?
It's like a run. It's like a thin runner. Yeah, but it's definitely it's like if you don't have money to spend on the 900 series New Balance, you get like these were the big five models. I would always find them at big five. Like no other stores would really carry them at like big five and kind of, bang for your buck type stores. I wear Adidas Superstar. I like the all black with a white three stripes, I wear just basic stuff, but I had this like monster collection of shoes.
How are you getting the shoes from stores? Did you build up a clientele of stores that you knew the manager, you would show up and they knew what you were there to do or what? How were you amassing that collection
a frequent buyer at the stores. I had relationships with a lot of the managers. During that time, I was into, some nefarious activities. So I could trade and get really incredible value with some managers. There was a few managers that got.
What were you trading, Corgi?
I was at that time drugs.
Okay.
And there was a few managers that got upside down with me. So I really came up well on that. Also, what was great was that.
Can we pause on that? I want to know more about the managers going upside down on you and you somehow coming up good on that equation.
You have a debt and you have to pay. And if you don't have cash, then you're just figuring out a way to get, then sneakers are fine with me.
Mm. Got it.
It's an incredible exchange rate. Also, what was good was the friends and family. I remember the friends and family at Foot Locker and Champs and Finish Line, all that stuff. I mean, I would back then, they had a lot of sneakers left in the store. It's quite, quite different from these days. So you could buy really good, you could buy Jordans or Air Max or, Air Force, like the Force Series, Barclays, stuff like that, stuff that I liked. And I would just spend like, thousands on, and just one ring up,
This was because kids this doesn't really even happen anymore because in this era, a lot of the brands are heavier on the outlets. So they'll buy back the shoes, before they even get to because Foot Locker will have a lowest dollar that they'll sell something at, and it's usually like $60 or $70. But in the era that you were racking up shoes, just explain.
They were like $19.99, $7.99. You could get shoes would go all the way down to like penny SKUs. And I'd ask the manager, "Hey, run a print on all the penny SKUs you have, or the penny SKU, or the penny."
You're literally paying 1 cent for a pair of Nike Dunks.
Literally penny SKUs for shoes or obscure shoes, but there was a lot of $9.99, $19.99, $24.99 plus half off.
Wow,
that's insane! So at that point you had like 20 pairs of the white and navy Dunk Pro B that you bought for $9.99, and then 50% off on top of that.
Yes, that was another one I always bought. The 2001. I think those were 2001. It was the all white midnight navy accent Dunk Low Pro B. Yeah, so that was a great shoe.
Essentially $5, and that's a sneaker that you can sell for how much in 2020?
Oh, fuck. I wish I had them in 2020. That's like probably a $300 shoe now.
This is literally like Wolf of Wall Street of sneakers. Like when he's selling, when he's in the boiler room selling the penny stocks, yes. Like this will be the big come up. and then he ends up going and doing a ton of drugs. So there's like a lot of similarities between.
I mean, there could be similar parallels. And then there was. We both of us had to go on vacation and, right. You know, we learned our lesson.
But before you went on vacation, as you call it, I know you had a house basically that was just filled with shoes. Is that right? Were shoes yes. entirely consuming your life?
Yes. I had a house and then I had a condo, and the house had six bedrooms. And I'd say, four of them were just filled with shoes.
Wow.
And I had a condo filled with shoes. Did you get around at all? Or it was like, could you open the door?
It was just packed in there. Like I didn't have those cute sneaker little display cases that everyone has now.
You don't mean like back me here.
You weren't going to the container store every few weeks
No, I wasn't getting my custom flip top containers. That my setup's like yours, Brendan. You know, just with it was just kind of stacked in there, and I would just put them in the back and go to the front. So I had I said it was like 2,000, but looking back on it, and now that I know what 2,000 pairs looks like. It had to be close to like 4,000 pairs.
You think you had 4,000 pairs of sneakers? This is back in 2004, right?
Yes.
And do you think at that point you had the biggest collection in the world?
Personal collection, probably, because at that point, like, sneakers were just kind of catching on.
Yeah.
So I don't think anybody else would have that like fascination and oddity or waste that much money on sneakers.
Mm-hmm.
When did you start selling the shoes?
2009, like November.
Wow, late.
So it was how many years would you say in total that you just were buying and not doing anything with them?
Well, 2004 to 2009, there was a gap, you know.
That you're locked up, right?
Yeah. So, but before then, I'd say I had a good, like, collecting run about 94, 95. A good 10 years.
Was there
and then like heavy buying for like 7 years, like big time, but like going to Nike Town and just like, I'll take cleaning them out of just whatever they got in, you know? And
I didn't, that's one place ever? I never, were they hesitant to sell you stuff? Did they think you were up to
something?
No,
they didn't care. Funny. And I'd bring up, you know, let's say like I did this one time and they said, please don't do that again. I had like $6,000 for the sneakers and I paid it. Literally, I had like fives and ones. I was like, I need to get rid of all these. And they were like, all right, it was just this one time, but we're never going to do this again. And I was like, and I thought about it and I was like, what a dick I am. Like, who does this? Like, just how 3 hours? Is that?
3 hours yeah. at the register.
Oh, they were just counting. I said, I'll buy you guys lunch and like, you know, I'll come back. But they counted it all. I tipped them because I was just like, what was I thinking? You know, one of those like cringe moments where I was like, oh, I just want to get rid of all my fives and ones. And then I'm just like, you really told me, like, oh my God, I can't believe that.
And you never knew that, like, after, you never were in your head like, hey, I'm going to sell this all one day? Or is it just?
No, I never had that intention. And the market wasn't there. Like, maybe you could buy a shoe for $100 and sell it for $125. Like, there was no big market for sneakers then. You know, I say the sneakers first started to have a market with like, I mean, Jordans, you could get a little bit on, you know, when the Jordan 11s came out, there was probably some, you know, I'm going to make $50 off this pair, but it wasn't like a big deal. If you were selling, I know some people were selling to Japanese buyers. Mm-hmm. That was like the main way, but even that money wasn't great. You know, I'll make $30 on each pair, $40 is what they would say. It wasn't like a big margin. I think the artist series kind of changed things, or the laser pack. I remember that fundamentally changing like sneakers. That was what, 2003, 2002, 2003.
Halle Berry Rift. So we were talking about that recently,
right? Yes. There we go. The Halle Berry. And one of our late night texts, or early morning for you, late night.
Yeah, I heard you guys text. We were just talking about that, actually. Yeah.
We stay in communication. Yeah,
he's never awake when I'm texting him, for some reason.
Corgi, I got to ask more about those early acquisitions. I know you were spending a lot of time on eBay, and I found an old quote from you on Nike Talk. We're not going to go too back into the old quotes, but you chalked up a lot of those shoes you had amassed to, and this is your quote, eBay being heaven sent for deals, lots of meth, and disposable income. Did you see any parallels between drug addiction and sneaker addiction? I don't want to write your story for you, but what do you think about that?
I don't believe it. I'm not big on addiction. I think it's like unless it's physiological. If it's psychological, then it's just choices. So I made a concerted choice to, sell drugs, do drugs. Like, that's a great quote, by the way. I don't even know where you. Wow, that's very fitting for that time. You know, I would get hyper focused, and that stuff, keeps you pretty hyper focused, can keep you up for a few days, and you're just sitting there on eBay, just like sifting through every single auction there is, every single listing there is. You know, I just go on like 24 or 48 hours of just eBay buying buying up everything, and everything was so cheap. You know, people were just getting reddish, trying to just get rid of it. They weren't selling it at that time. eBay was a place where you're not selling things for profit; you're just selling it to get it out of your possession.
When was the time where, was there a time where you're like, what am I going to do with all this stuff if I don't start selling it? Or you were okay collecting forever?
2009. That was the time. I don't know how things would have went, post 2004, but I really didn't have like a plan at all. I know I would have continued down that route, amassing more and more stuff. I mean, I could imagine how many like watermelon Air Force Ones I would have had, gems like those, and like weird shit. I mean, it was getting kind of weird at that time. I think sneakers took a dip also during that, they were kind of popular.
You consider yourself a hoarder?
For sneakers, most definitely.
But like, and, you see those shows like American Pickers and stuff, and there's like that old guy in Iowa that has like 15 barns just full of like old shit that he bought at, yard sales, and now he's 90 years old. He doesn't know what to do with it. Like,
he should have sold it.
But do you see yourself, like, I know you're selling everything now, but do you think that that's where your life kind of was headed
shoes? Because eventually I would have had two things would have happened. I would have had just too many shoes, and I would have seen where the market was going. I said, I got to sell some of this stuff, especially since I don't wear it and there's great value in them. I would have eventually sold. Just common sense would be like, you got to sell,
Cause I know when you first came on the scene, it was like 2009. That's what you mentioned, right? I think what a lot of people know is you, cause you went on to Nike Talk and you kind of just like set up shop. You like kind of had like a thread, and you had a blog where like all the shoes were listed.
A WordPress blog. I set up a WordPress blog. Yeah.
And I remember buying a pair of shoes from you off of there in 2009. It was a pair of OG Air Max Deluxe, which I still have to this day. I think they were $150.
Yeah.
And I hit you up. And Deluxe,
that's a great shoe. That's Alpha Project, right?
Yeah. So I hit you up to buy the shoes. And I think you thought I was someone else, and you were like, don't fucking worry about it. And I was like, oh, and you're like, hey, I'm not, and you're like, oh, I got you mixed up. And I'm like, no worries. And I'm like, well, you're like, just send me a money order. And I was like, okay. And you're like, here's the tracking number. Just send the money order. And you sent me the shoes before I even gave you the money for them.
Yeah, that would happen a lot.
Yes, he does that. You do that. I could tell you do that a lot. You've done that for me. Or as soon as I was like, hey, I'm interested in these, 2 hours later, I would get the shipping tracking info.
Yeah, just give me back. I know people are good for it, And the world is so small. The world is so small that it's I never really like worried about it. There's always somebody.
And also, for all his tough exterior, I will tell you, I don't know where. I think I tried to get a ginger pair of 16s and they sold quickly. And then I'm in the complex office. A package shows up and the ginger 16s randomly. This is like a year after I tried to get them. No heads up or anything. Were any of you working at Complex then or no?
Yes, I remember that story, Joe.
So I open, it's a pair of ginger 16s from him, and he just remembered. So listen, all the working out and the tough exterior, this guy knows how to kind of also have like a soft spot for good clientele.
Oh, I'm always in, what is it, feels? I'm always in my feels, as they say. if that's what people even say, I'm probably about 3, 4, 5 years late on that, by the way.
The slang?
Yeah, definitely.
I think the first time I tried to buy a pair of shoes from Corgi, I was in college, and I definitely flaked on him, but I was super nervous, because if anybody read Corgi's internet posts and his stuff on Nike Talk, you could tell that he was, you know, he was not playing around. And if you tried some bullshit, then you may pay for it somewhere down the line. And I know some people in the sneaker world have, whether or not we're going to name them here, but I wanted a pair of Olympic Jordan 7s from him. And I emailed him about them because, again, like Corgi mentioned here, you started up the WordPress site, and you were just, this was kind of the Wild West. You were sick of eBay and the crazy fees. The NT mods wouldn't let you live.
I never even sold on eBay.
You didn't even want to start because they wouldn't let you put Nike in the item descriptions and things like that.
Yeah, you know what? That's you have better memory about this than me. For some reason I listed like 20 shoes and they took them down and said I can't.
They were hating.
I can't. Yeah, something weird, something odd like that. It was just some listing issue. So I said, "Oh fuck this! I'm just going to start." And then I asked, I Googled I'm just going to use the blog. Because blogs were, popular back then. And I said, okay, WordPress is easy. And it was just this like very, you guys know, it was like very simple, like no bells and whistles. Just if you want the shoe, here you go, email me. And yeah, I had a ton of those Jordan 7s too, the Olympic ones.
I think I emailed you asking about them because you wouldn't post the prices and you were just looking for fair market value on them. And then you emailed me back. And then in that, I was a college student, so I hope you've forgiven me by now. Certainly forgotten about it. But in the interim period, I decided I didn't want to buy them. So I definitely lied to you over email and said, oh, I found a pair for cheaper on Nike Talk. But you definitely sent a message back like, I'm sure they won't be in the condition that you expect, but good luck.
I was a maniac back then. I would, like, looking back at a lot of the responses I would give, I was just like, man, that was just so unnecessary. Like I not how I felt, because that's truly how I felt. You know, I wasn't like playing it up. I was like, fuck this person, and that's just how I felt. But nowadays I just don't respond. That's my new thing. I have two new tricks that I do. I either just stop, instead of replying, just venom and hate, I just don't respond. Or when I reply, I found that if you use emojis like the praying hands, or the fist, or the happy face, you could fucking say anything to someone and then just use that, and they won't take it the wrong way.
Speaks volumes.
Yeah, I mean, there was an era when there would be like a 16-year-old kid who wanted to buy a pair of shoes from you, and he would do some bullshit, and you would like find his mom on Instagram.
I still have that.
You found his mom on Instagram, and you wrote this whole long post about her son, and you and were like, hey, this is what your son's doing on the internet.
And tagged his mom. And again, unnecessary, but that was first ballot Hall of Fame for sure.
And Dunn got off scot-free. Dunn, you got off scot-free. The Magic Card convention on campus could have been went a lot different.
I found the email from 2010. I can't see the reply, but I see them listed on ISS and Nike Talk buyer seller DS Jordan guide for 220, 230 thoughts. I definitely reply, but I can't find the old reply.
I hope none of them get. I mean, I every once in a while, if someone emails me, I'll search like former emails and from that person just so I could refresh my memory to see who it is. And I'll just see some of my replies and I'm like, oh, just unnecessary.
Do you regret any of that stuff?
I definitely would have changed. I think I would have changed the way I would just would have stopped replying. Mm-hmm. It's not like I didn't feel that way, or I mean, I was just telling a person how I felt.
When sneaker reselling really started to take off for you kind of in, you know, the Instagram era.
Yeah.
How much money like was actually like rolling in once you were like posting shoes on Instagram all the time and just had a bigger audience that wasn't searching for it on a blog?
It was pretty nice.
Yeah.
I mean, it was good. It was good money. It was really good money. The money's still good now. It's just different. You know, I'd say it's in that early Instagram era, there weren't as many people selling on Instagram. And I had a lot of shoes that were very desirable at that time. You know, it's kind of like I've caught a few peaks. I've caught some valleys with stuff, you know, so it just kind of balances out. But it was, it's good enough money where I, you know, this was my job, my only, you know, source of income.
What do you think your biggest peak was the bulk of? Was it the Jordan 1s? Was it something
Jordan
else?
Jordan 1s for sure. Jordan 1s. And during that time, just, you know, all the Jordans that were, and even, you know, people like vintage Jordans too, originals. Mm-hmm. Let's just say, because nowadays, like a shoe that's 3 years old is vintage. So original, you know, original up to like 2004 Jordans, which, and I was just loaded on all those, you know, from let's say from the 94 Jordan. And then I had some original. I was never really like, I had original Jordan 1 pairs, but I kind of got those. I sold those off to another buyer who just private buyer who paid a ton for them. But at that time period, I just had all the Jordans, a lot of Air Maxes. I had, you know, from the early 2000s when all the people were playing catch up. I mean, that's what I primarily, my business is primarily for the buyer who's playing catch up.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
You know, and wants to get a shoe and say, you know, they've had that shoe the whole time, but they were just kind of low key or hiding it, you know?
Once the space got crowded in terms of consignment and, you know, Flight Club comes around and other consignment stores, how more difficult was it? Was your kind of process for getting the shoes in bulk like that?
Not really difficult at all. It's all the same.
Are you still buying old shoes?
Yeah. When was the last time you did a bulk order or a bulk buyout like you've done?
I mean, I just pick up here and there. I would, truthfully, if it wasn't for the internet, I would have to, you know, move on. Maybe I'd work at a post office or something. You know, I just don't go to like store. I used to have connections to stores. This is all pre-2004. Post-2004, I don't have any connections at stores. I would never ask, you know, the people who work for shoe brands that I know, I would never ask them for a favor like that. You know, I would never wait in line or, you know, pay the backdoor price. So the internet, you know, you could just find anything you want on the internet if you look.
Now that like consignment has become like big business, right? Like there's people like you reselling shoes online, but then it feels like everyone who was a little bit involved in it early on, you know, you have like you said, the advent of Flight Club, you have Stadium Goods, you have StockX, you have people like, you know, Dre doing Project Blitz, who kind of opened up businesses. Do you ever wish that you had done that instead of just trying to sell shoes yourself?
First, I love that interview with Chris that you guys did. Chris Vidal.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, that was a great interview, and huge respect to that dude. He was like a pioneer, and always it was from an era where you just couldn't get immediate entry into, you know, you just couldn't come in and buy a few pairs of shoes and, you know, get a membership to the club, I guess. You know, he was like a gatekeeper, a standard bearer, and I've always admired him and his kind of approach and attitude towards. I think that's really missing in sneakers today, where, you know, if you could get 200 pairs of Yeezy out the back door, then you're the greatest reseller ever. You know, you could come in and just spend massive amounts of money, and then all of a sudden you're on Complex, you know, you're featured, and you know, you're the greatest thing ever. I think, but anyways, back to your question. I think I should have changed things up or been more receptive to business opportunities. And here's my problem with all the times someone approached me about doing open up a shop. I was bringing the shoes And they were bringing
not
the offer to, I mean, what are they bringing? Like, they're not bringing shoes. They're just, you know, they're not necessarily, they're just like, hey, I got a great idea. Let's, you know, let's open up the shop. We'll sell your shoes. And I'm like, okay. And then I give you 50% of the money of selling my shoes. Like, where, how is that beneficial to me? And that was always the problem where I just never saw, there was never a true partnership, you know, and I don't need someone to like run the back end. You know, I'm capable of doing that. And I'm certainly not going to be a mascot for the store, you know, shaking hands and kissing babies out front. So I just didn't see it as something that was a good fit for me. Now I do consign to a lot of product now. So, you know, the last couple of years I have.
You said that you were using StockX more, right?
StockX most definitely. And then a few consignment shops. I have a lot of stuff in there just because their clientele will, you know, grossly overpay for, that's what consignment shops are. You know, they're great. you know, consignment shops have that ability or more consistently have that buyer where the person will just overpay.
Is that because, why do you think that they want it right there? They want to leave the store with it or what?
I think they get a lot of tourists.
Okay.
For one. I mean, in particular, you know, there's been a huge boom in sneakers in China. So a lot of the, you know, Chinese tourists. And also, they get a lot of the people that are just flashy and want to say, hey, I spent, you know, so XXX on a shoe. They don't know about the shoe and they just see the price and, you know, it could be a $200 shoe and they just paid $700 for it.
And how do you navigate that now? Because we see so many of the valuable sneakers, kind of those flashy, you know, you look at kind of like a Ben and Jerry's Dunk where you have classic SBs and you have classic double stuff tongue dunks. Right. How do you feel when you see like the Ben and Jerry's and the Grateful Dead's and things of this year that the prices they release and the prices explode?
I think it's very telling about just the market and the consumer. The people are there. I suppose the most of the people buying now or the consumer that is driving the market is just, oh, this came out. Let me get it. I'll pay whatever for it. You know, they just, they don't necessarily appreciate the older stuff and they don't have to, but I just think it's more indicative of the current market where you see the prices on, or even like on a Syracuse, you know, Syracuse or Kentucky Dunk Low, you know, it's like, those are like $400 or $500 and you're just like,
how is that possible?
Right. Because that, and I'm not trying to besmirch anyone, but just the current consumer, because it's become so pop culture, because, you know, this is so like, you know, Kardashian, it's inspired by, not by athletes, but by celebrities and music artists. You know, it's just, it's all very, I guess, in the best sense of the word, like dumbed down, you know, hey, this is the shoe, this is the SB that we came out and you need to have it. And here's the price, you know, people can, you know, ask for, you know, $350, $400, $500 for the new SB and they can get it. Or the Ben and Jerry. Now, Ben and Jerry's was like a special shoe. It's pretty unique. Mm-hmm. On foot, I don't know. I mean, I think you have to be a very unique individual to have that on foot, especially at a certain age. You know, that's one thing. I remember when I was working some retail a few years back.
And can we say where?
Yeah, that's fine. I was at Supreme for a few years, and I would just see. I just pay attention to who, you know, the consumer and who comes in. You see like a 13, 14, 15 year old kid wearing the same thing that a 20 year old kid is wearing, the same thing that a 40 year old man is. And it was just, I don't know. I think that's, again, that's very indicative of like what's changed as far as individuality, as far as how the internet and social media has dictated what to wear, what style, you know.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting too, because you're not necessarily acquiring that new stuff, but you're continuing to flourish as a reseller off of all your old stock. I know you said in 2009 that you anticipated running out of stock around 2010, but Corgi, we're a decade later, and I know you took a break and you're working at Supreme, and you still have stuff. When does this stuff run out? How much stuff are you sitting on?
Yeah, when it's not, when I still have a good amount of stuff. I really
thousands.
Do. Well, with the clothing component and then the sneakers, yeah, I still have a lot of stuff in storage as well as at consignment shops. You know, and that sells much slowly. That sells much more slowly.
But the money's better.
If that's grammatically correct, let me think about that. But the money is, you know, it's worth it. Just, you know, trickling where, you know, something, a t-shirt that I would list for $100, they could sell for $300. Wow. A sweater that I would sell for $500, $600, they could get $1,200 for it. You know, just it's amazing how consignment shops work. StockX too. StockX is another marketplace where you could really do well depending on the item you have. You know, if you're selling the majority of current releases, then StockX really isn't going to do well for you. Mm-hmm. But
small margins.
You know, there's a few shoes and clothing, but otherwise you're just getting killed. You know, they raised their shipping fees too. I noticed that it went from like 11 to 13 or something like that. Just
what do you think about like the modern crop of resellers then, who are like kids who are getting 600 pairs of an Air Jordan release through a bot, you know, in like unlimited credit cards, and then just flipping them all for like $15 the next day and trying to buy a car off of it to flex on the internet?
I think it's, I mean, I would say buy a house, but you know, as far as like buying all the shoes with the bot, if the, you know, I've always said the brands do not care. The brands, enable the bots. The brands love the bots. You know, it makes demand so much better, especially when the product numbers are still fairly high. If you can have an immediate sellout because of bots the brand's not doing anything about the bots, then it's great. As far as selling their stuff and making money, I think that's amazing.
I know this is an important part of the Corgi story to me too, because I think you were one of the early people who was retaliating against the kind of mainstream narrative within sneaker media at the time that the reseller was bad or that the reseller was evil. And you stuck by that, hey, it's not bad that we're into this thing and we're going to make money off it. Because I think in the early days of the sneaker internet, the people who were writing the articles just kind of defaulted to anybody who's flipping shoes is a bad person and shouldn't be doing that and does not love it or isn't in it for the love.
I always found that odd that, I always kind of felt like, show me a person who's against resellers and I'll show you a person that couldn't buy a shoe to resell. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody hates resellers except when it's their time. When they get an opportunity to buy the shoe and resell it, then it's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, you're like, oh, I struck out, fuck all these resellers. But then when their bot hits and they get three pairs, they're selling it immediately. And I just always found a lot of irony in that. I think there's nothing wrong with, you know, people will resell any tangible good. I mean, shit, people resell those Funko Pop thingies.
You're not in the Funko Pop game yet?
No, I've not well versed in that, but I've seen that. I mean, people will sell anything. So sneakers are no different. I think, I don't think it's a talent or skill to resell. That's one thing I've always tried to balance things out with. Like when I see someone with, you know, but when the Yeezys were being, you know, people would have, you know, hundreds of pairs. I'm like, okay, you know, you paid this on, I mean, it's just not it's a money game. There's no talent or skill. It's completely arbitrary. All you need is money. Walk up to somebody, you know, store manager and say, hey, I want to buy all your pairs. I'll give you this money. The manager will figure out how to do it. As far as the bots, you know, that's another thing too. I guess if you have a better bot and more, you know, a lot of credit, you know, you have a lot of, your credit line is pretty, is up there and you could do it. I mean, it's just a way of finding a way to get things done, but there's too many resellers that, you know, have come and gone that have just been like, I'm the greatest ever. This is such a skill and talent. Same with buying sneakers. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of people who buy sneakers who spend just endless amounts of money, and then they act like it's like a talent or skill, or they're special. Like all you did was spend more money than anyone else. That's all it came down to.
I feel like you hate the shoe celebrity people. You have like a disdain for like people who just like they make their whole self image off of their sneaker collection.
Yeah, I just think it's not. I've never been impressed. Like nobody can impress me with their sneakers, you know, because I've either had that shoe or had opportunity to buy the shoe, or you know, just didn't buy it. And I know what things cost, and you know how you're getting your shoes. So what's it's just a money. It's just a money thing. You could have. If any of you had the money that I bet you Complex, but I bet you got all three of you got the money, but you're just more, no. more sensible with your earnings. That's why I'm trying to get a fourth, be the fourth man on this team here. So I can get that Complex money, or I need my own late night Complex yes. show, like from 2 to 3 a.m.
How many weeks would that last? Let over under.
Oh, the lawsuits would come immediately. You'd have people protesting. They'd protest in LA for me, and they'd protest your offices in New York. Canceled for sure.
Yeah. One thing
I would be, but my whole point is that there's nothing impressive about buying sneakers or buying cars or buying house. I mean, it just shows you have the money. That's all. And you're not exactly, you know, there's other assets you could buy that are more impressive, you know, more impressive.
You said that buying sneakers isn't a talent or skill. And I know that I've read interviews where you were like, going through my inventory, it's not a lot of rhyme or reason as to when to pull shoes out. Has that process matured anymore? You say, like, say you see The Last Dance and you know that these Jordan 1s are going to explode. Obviously, Jordan 1s is like a fastball down the middle. But what about when like the Nike SB reemergence happens? Have you changed your ways in that you go to the storage and you look for pairs just because it is like it makes more sense from a business perspective?
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. I've become more aware lately because everything's getting retro. So now, I'm pretty insulated from a lot of the stuff that's coming out. So I've made a much more concerted effort to like either ask people like, hey, what's coming, you know, is there anything coming out that I, you know, I'll ask a few people that know me and know what I have, you know the type of stuff, like, should I be selling anything? I used to ask people at Nike what was coming out, although those people have moved on to other endeavors, but that
people
really
at Nike
helped.
Were giving you resale advice?
No, they'd say like we're coming out with this shoe,
and that would inform you maybe to move.
Yeah, move them, like, you know, mm-hmm. Hey, move all your LeBrons because LeBron, you know, 1, 2, 3, and 4 are all coming out. Jordan 11 is coming out for the 18th time. You know, sell it. Jordan 1s, you know, stuff like that. Sometimes I get caught unaware of a shoe that's coming out, you know, and I'll just be like, fuck, I should have been more aware, perceptive, or, you know, that happens too.
Any of those that come to mind specifically?
Recently, there's been the Michigan Dunk. Mm-hmm. I think Brendan gave me we text and he said he thinks those are coming out like a month before, and I kind of spaced it.
Okay, look at this guy, the insider trader of the Wolf of Wall Street. Which one, who are you? You the Jonah Hill character?
Let the
character
record show
done?
I asked for no commission, but Corgi did cut me a deal down the line, so maybe I did get repaid.
Okay.
Corgi, one of the things that you hate, though, that's early and I remember, is you have a big disdain for leaked, like, China factory shoes and sneaker blogs posting them, such as ourselves.
Yeah, I think I've always had a problem because I'm like, although the shoes are going to look very similar, you're basically showing fake shoes, and you source the site, and then people go to the site and they buy it all up. I just had a big, always had a big problem with that. I just thought it was promoting and validating fakes. You know, that's just how I viewed it. I just felt it was the sites were so hungry for that information that they couldn't wait, or they couldn't do a mock-up, or they couldn't do a rumor. They had to get that, you know, photo, you know, with those little ladies in the background, you know, stitching shoes, you know, hand stitching their shoes or whatever. It's just, but that's, you know, now that's become standard. Or at least I think so. Do people still use leaked photos?
They're around.
It seemed, yeah, it seemed like it was still, it's become the standard. Mm-hmm. I just think it grays the line of it kind of muddles between authentic and real. Although the fakes are very, so good now on many, many, many shoes.
Did you ever buy a fake pair of sneakers?
I remember I sold a pair of fake Jordan 10s from 2005, white red, to a guy. And he hit me up like 2 weeks later. He's like, I think these are fake. And I said, I don't know.
I'll fucking slam you through the nearest sidewalk if you ever talk to
me. No, not at all. Not at all. And he said, I think these are fake. And I said, why do you think that? And he's like, I'll kind of look at this and send me some photos. I said, oh, yeah, you're right. Good eye. So I'm always cool about that. I've had, I sold a Malcolm McLaren, like 2009. It was like the most random fucking Supreme shirt. Like, mm-hmm. I was like, who? I didn't even check. I just looked at it.
How sold could there it. Possibly the be like, a hey. Fake of this shirt?
Right. The guy's like, I think this is fake. I was like, and I'm always good. Like, if someone, there's been probably like those two and then like one more guy, one more occasion. And I'm always cool about that. I'm like, well, let me know like why you think that. And they'll send me a photo or something. I'll be like, oh, fuck. I can't believe they made a fake of that. It threw me off. You know, it's always, it was amazing. They'll bootleg anything is my point. But, you know, that's happened to me. The fuck was it? Something on my Instagram page. And he's like, oh, it was a Supreme accessory. And he's like, oh, the NYC is like off-centered. And I was like, holy shit. It's like, I'm very thankful for people that have ever like, you know, caught some of that stuff, caught wind to it, because it's just phenomenal how well-studied and scholarly people are on certain products, you know, where they'll be able to say like, oh, that NYC should be like a millimeter over. And then they'll send pictures and I'll be like, man, thank you. I really appreciate people like you who are like, you know, so in tuned with it. I've never been a nerd like that where I was so focused on like all, you know, the little detail, you know, the little details. It was never like a consuming thing. I just thought, okay, it looks good. It looks good. So I'm always very appreciative when people are like, you know, catch little details. All right. There was a LeBron. This was the last one. I think it was a LeBron 8, mm-hmm. like worn LeBron 8 and no box. And I listed it and he's like, hey, in my DMs, he's like, hey, I think this is fake. I looked at it. I was like, oh shit, you're right. You know, it's always like some off.
The most random shoe.
Yeah, just random stuff. I'm always real appreciative and cool. Like, I'm never like, oh, no, you're wrong. Or, mm-hmm. you know, I'm always, you know, I'm so-and-so and I don't sell. It's like, it happens to everybody, you know? The bigger problem is the people that knowingly sell the fakes, you know? Knowingly, you know, and that's, I still see that as a big problem. I think if you're selling fakes and you say, hey, these are not fake, but they're good enoughs, I'm actually fine with that. Like, if you're 100% transparent, you're like, hey, you know, these are from the China factories. They look close. You know, if you're interested, let me know. I mean, how could you be really mad at that? Someone's like full disclosure.
Corgi, I want to ask, you know, a lot of people see you as a reseller. And like I said, there's a stigma about people who resell don't necessarily care about shoes or aren't genuinely into shoes or don't love shoes. I don't believe that's the case with you because I see how passionate you are about this stuff. And I want to know, like, what's the stuff that you like right now? Are you still just excited about the old stock that you have? Do any new sneakers excite you?
Not really.
Nothing?
Not one that came out that you were like, this is a good shoe? Recently,
there might be some good. I'm pretty insulated from that stuff, you know. Okay. I was working on my list of you know, that we could go over of top 50 releasing next week, but you know, I know you guys are heavy on that. No, nothing like is impressive. Really is impressive. I guess like no, nothing like catches my eye. Nothing catches my eye. I just kind of wear what I wear.
What's the last new shoe you bought for yourself?
Oh, okay. I bought a bunch of these Adidas like Boost kind of Flyknit material runners at Costco, and they were $20 each. And I bought 12 pairs.
Wow. Still got the bulk in you.
And I'll just wear those. Now I don't need a workout shoe for the next like three years. That's it. anything. I haven't bought a sneaker personally for me in ages. I still am fortunate to get a few things from Nike every once in a while. And I don't, otherwise I don't really need to, I don't really wear sneakers like that. You know, I kind of, I wear, I have a good amount of Vans still that I like to wear. New Balance, of course, not the 496, because those are just unwearable anymore. They don't, they didn't like update them. So I still have one pair left just in the box of one of my favorites.
When you got locked up in 2004 and you were away for years, were you thinking about sneakers at all during that time?
Sure. I talked to a lot of people about sneakers, you know, being in, being in New York with a lot of, you know, young adult males, you know, we talk about sneakers all the time. My friend, my very, very good friend, Amp, who I met in prison in MDC Brooklyn. He was talking about shoes one day and I started talking with him. That's like how we kind of, you know, connected. And then there was a bunch of guys in there who like shoes. You know, everybody was buying shoes, whether it was the Jordans or Agassiz or Bo Jacksons or this or that, you know, Air Maxes. So there, I did think about sneakers, but I had other pressing issues on my mind, of course, you know, during that time, you know.
Did you have sneakers on the inside?
No, I would wear the free, like Bob Barker, that's the company that makes them, either the Skipper Bobo shoes, like the court shoes, or the free Chuck Taylor version. I never bought them. I'd be like, I'll wear them for free. I would just wear them out because I would play a lot of handball and basketball. And I just, you know, I was like, I'm not going to waste like 80, you know, 60, 80, 100 bucks on a pair of New Balance or the Nike they offered when I could just get these unlimited for free.
Did you feel like when you got out that everything had changed and you didn't recognize this whole sneaker thing anymore? Was there a drastic difference?
It was crazy. I was insulated as far as what was released and the pricing. And when I got out, I was like, the market was pretty, it really vamped up from, you know, during those 5 years. So that brings me back to like why I would say like, hey, just make an offer, because I had no awareness of what things were really worth. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of like crowdsource it. Like, okay, I get 10 emails and, you know, one guy's offering me like $60 and then four people are like $400. I'm like, okay, it's probably closer to $400 than $60, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was just a complete change in, you know, the stuff that had come out during that time. And I mean, it's just, it's incredible how much you miss. Technology wise too. I was just like, wow, what's going on here?
Corgi, where do you see, once the inventory eventually runs out, where are you buying any more to keep the inventory to have more legs? Or once the inventory is done, you think that you'll kind of walk away?
Most definitely. I'm still buying some stuff here and there. I still have a lot to sell. It just matters where the market goes. If it's just, I'm seeing the market as being still sustainable, but it will just be, it's interesting where the market is going. There's always going to be a market though. So it just matters if I could get, you know, the percentage I'm looking for return on the shoes, or what I ideally I'd like, you know, where do you guys think the market is going? It seems like it's really siphoned, where it's like, there's a lot of stuff coming out, but only a few things that are really worth, you know, worth money.
It's hard to say. I think it was cool for a lot of people to say 6 or 7 years ago that there was a bubble. And I don't think those claims were based on a lot of real data. It just became the cool thing for older people who were into sneakers to say. And we haven't seen the quote unquote bubble burst yet. So I'm not convinced that it's slowing down anytime soon.
No, it's definitely bigger than ever. But I feel like it's the SKUs that people are after is, there's a ton of shit coming out, but the stuff that people want, and the stuff that has a secondary market is, you know, less and less.
I don't know, man. There's a lot of Yeezys kids are selling.
Shoes are either $1,000 or like on sale. There's like,
that's what I'm kind of saying. Like there's a lot of stuff being made. I'm interested to see where it goes, you know, where it's going to be in 2 years. Inevitably things will slow down. You know, dunks will go back to normal. I feel like they've already have kind of, you know, tapered off a bit,
down a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. As people are going to the next thing, you know, Jordans are always going to be popular, but what Jordans are really making money? How many out of how many that are released, like what Jordans are, you know, really making? I think it's a great time if you're a buyer personally. Mm-hmm. I think it's good if you just like shoes and want to have like a variety of shoes, you could get some really cool deals and good stuff.
But you're not really a buyer at this point. Is there anything you're looking for? The Glass Jaw Blazers? Did you ever find that?
I had two pairs of those.
You did get them.
Two of them.
I'm glad you did that. Is there anything else on your Grail list that you want to check off?
No. Maybe I think I have an original Air Revolution. I want to eventually get that 86 Python or 86, whatever it came out. I've seen pairs, but they're like $500. I'll be like, I'll wait when it's $100, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily need, I have like a lifetime of memories and thoughts as far in sneakers. I don't need to like necessarily validate those memories, fond memories and thoughts like on foot or having it, you know, in my possession. You know, it's the same to me. If I never buy that original Air Python, it's fine. I'll be okay. And I could buy it now. I mean, it's just a question of, I don't necessarily want, you know, don't necessarily need it like sitting there.
Corgi, one thing, what happens to the sneakers that turned out to not be valuable? What do you do with them? Is there a lot of them?
Not so much anymore. Every once in a while, I'll come across something. I'm like, man, not a good pick. I you know, just sell stuff. I'll just sell it at whatever, you know, whatever. Yeah, I got it, you know, I got it cheap, so I'll sell it cheap and try to put that money into something that I know will have a good margin. You know, I will say right now I'm much more selective in buying. That's something that's changed. And now I'm very selective in anything that I buy because I the market is so not, you know, as we've seen, not everything goes up. A lot of things start off high and then just drop and drop and drop and then become stagnant because there's so much other product coming down and everybody is so what's coming out, you know, next week is my favorite shoe ever. The next week is my favorite shoe ever. You know, how do you have four all-time grails, you know, in 1 month for a year? It's just that type it's of different. Mentality is what is as I feel like that type of mentality is driving the market because the consumer has kind of just gained access to the market. So they're very, you know, it's a younger market and, I think most everybody's just fixated on the same shoes. But there's still like some old, really old school vintage guys that will be like, you know, still trying to buy like 87 Agassiz, and that's cool. I mean, if you guys buy any like any, you guys, are you guys all flip flopped on the Union? I remember,
not me
listening to the podcast.
I like the I did like the shoe, but
I think a lot of those things take time, and I buy new shoes regularly.
No, I thought Welty was like kind of lukewarm, and then as a week before release, it was like very sky high. I think Joe liked him.
He loves those now.
I didn't like that shoe particularly. I have great respect and fondness for Chris Gibbs. He did a great interview with you guys.
Thanks, man.
You guys really asked him some great stuff, and he's so like eloquent and just polished, professional. Yeah, you know,
so great to hear those stories.
It's that good. Canadian education growing up. You know, they have a good public system.
Corgi, I have one last question for me, sneaker wise. Is there a shoe that you have that you know is worth an insane amount of money, and you may only have one of it, or you are always buying in bulk? Were there any singular come ups that you know that you have that is like honestly just a personal game changer for you that you have and you could sell it for maybe not a life-changing amount of money, but something that you could sell that could really afford you something to do whatever you want?
Let me see. Like, no, I remember, I mean, there were some shoes now that I wish I would have saved. That was the problem. You know, I was, when you're selling and you know, who would have thought that like some of the first SBs would be worth what they're worth now. Mm-hmm. But I wish I would have saved like my Deftone Dunk. You know, I sold that to a friend. I gave him a good price. Actually, it was a fair price. Like nobody wanted that. That Dunk wasn't high in demand. I have a good story of how I got that Deftone Dunk for literally like an 8-ball of Coke. And I think like a half a gram of meth. It was one of those stories from like a guy who was like a roadie with a band.
And that's hard to tell you because I don't know the going rates on these things.
Yeah. It was just one of those stories where like we were kind of partying and I knew him and he's like, hey, you like shoes, right? And I was like, yeah. He's like, I got this dunk. I'll bring it by next time. You brought it by. And it was like a Deftone dunk. And I hadn't even really like, I was a fan, you know, fan of the Deftones for sure. And I was like, oh, that's sick. Like, you know, and they looked really, really legit. So I was like, how much you want from him? He's like, just give me like a party pack. And I was like, cool. Wow. All right. And then it turned out to be, you know, a well sought after shoe, especially now if you have those, it would have been real nice. But I don't really, to your question, because I often ramble and digress. I don't have a single shoe right now that would be like life-changing, but I guess maybe like a good amount of a sale would be what, 30, 40, 50,000 would not life-changing, but that'd be a nice so you chunk
don't,
of change.
You don't have like a Flom dunk or something.
That's
like
what
that.
I mean. No, something like,
no, I know okay. You could buy one for like what, 50 grand.
Yeah. Or somebody, it's one just sold for $63,000, which is crazy, you know?
Was that I think I saw that.
Sotheby's auction.
Yeah, Sotheby's. That was, who was that? Was that Futura's shoe, Lenny's shoe, or was that
I believe
a private that seller selling it?
Belonged to a private collector named Ryan Chang.
Oh, okay. Okay, I wasn't sure if Futura, Lenny had, was selling it, you know, selling his stuff. Or not. I thought, man, either way, that's cool. Make your money.
We're right at the end of this, and we're really getting into the real corgi shoe story, spoons, balloons, and motel rooms.
Yes. One of my favorite sayings. By the hour. That's it.
I hope we get a chance to talk more about those stories one day. But also, I feel like we'd be remiss while we have you here to not talk about your other Instagram account and mm-hmm. the work you're doing in LA's homeless communities. Can you talk about that for a bit?
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. After I left Supreme, I had a lot of free time, you know, because I was working full time there, obviously. So I said, I just wanted to do something. I didn't just want to, you know, I want to do something with my time. And I said, hey, you know, I live downtown and there's just homelessness has exploded. And I just thought it'd be interesting to like interview homeless people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's been real informative. And I just say like, what's going on? How long have you been homeless? It's real. It's not professional. It's not polished. It's just two people having a conversation and you just find out like, what's everybody's story? What can, you know, are they interested in going to the shelter? Are they, you know, what's their situation? Do they want to get off the streets? What role do like, you know, do drugs play any role in their life? Just basic questions like that. And I also, you guys, Brendan, who especially assisted, you know, Stance, through you sent some socks and I give out socks to homeless people and, you know, just a brand new pair of socks. Other people, there's been many people that have donated socks, where they, shoot me a few bucks and I'll buy them or, other people just send me socks direct through Amazon and I'll literally just pass them out hand to hand to people who are living on the street. And they really appreciate it because that's, you know, something that's seldom donated. Mm-hmm. You know, there's mm-hmm. tons of food. There's a lot of clothing, but you know, socks is like, I come across people that don't have socks. So they really value it. I'm like, hey, you want a pair of socks? And they're like eyes light up and they're just super happy. And it really, you know, makes a connection where, as you know, I'll see a lot of people over and over and, you know, just conversate with them just in general, you know, a couple of them call me. I have some people that have my number and we'll just fucking chat sometimes. What are you up to? And this and that.
Honestly, it's something that a lot of people see from afar, but your conversation is one thing that I've noticed just following that Instagram account and checking in with it here and there. It's like you are showing the many facets of homelessness and, you know, what people are dealing with and how long some people have been on the streets and how right. young some of these people are. So it's been really eye-opening and, you know, I just applaud you for doing that. And it shows that those people are comfortable talking to you. So.
Yeah, it's odd that, for some reason the people are comfortable. I think part of it we'll always, you know, we'll talk before I do the on-camera interview, and, you know, they'll see I'm a regular guy. You know, we'll talk, a lot of people that have been, are, you know, homeless, have been in and out of prison, drug issues. I could certainly relate to that. So people get real comfortable and just see I'm just a regular person. And we could also talk about how much money is spent on homelessness by the government with minimal results. And it's just crazy how it's tragic how much waste and how our local, state, and federal government approaches homelessness. And it's just a bill, you know, tens of billions spent every year and to no avail. And it's just, it's a big business. I'll just put it like that. It is a huge business, and bringing people off the street cuts funding for that business. So, you know, that's my, the biggest thing that I've taken from doing this page.
Got it. Well, Corgi, can't thank you enough. It's been long overdue that we chopped it up and to hear your stories and kind of finally talk to you at length. You know, I know Welty has interviewed you, and I know you and Brendan text, and you and I hit each other up here and there, but it was great. I really appreciate you taking the time and kind of telling the stories and how you amassed such a collection that never ceases to like surprise me, man. It's like, it's every time like a post goes up or a bulk of posts go up, it's exciting. So thanks again for joining.
I really appreciate you guys having me on. You guys have had some very esteemed names and big guests. So it's really an honor that you guys would ask me on and just let me, you know, rant and say all the little things. I truly appreciate it.
Thank you, man.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, guys.
Our producer is Dave Matthews. Our associate producer is Jasmine Plata. Sound engineering done by William Smith. Special thanks to Jennifer Stewart and Shiva Bayet. The Complex Sneakers Podcast is a production of the Complex Podcast Network.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.